Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
The year was 1888. Carl Benz had just patented the world's first motor car 2 years earlier with the assumption that his incredible technical innovations would lead to a successful business. But he quickly found that his patent motor wagon wouldn't sell. The world just wasn't ready for it. People were skeptical that these loud, messy, horseless carriages would ever be reliable enough to be useful. And so Carl's business chances looked shot, much as they had been on a series of previously failed business ventures. So it was quite the shock when Bertha Benz, his wife, decided to do something about it. In secret and completely unprecedented, it ended up changing the way the world looked at the automobile. Today on Pass Gas, it's the story of Bertha Benz's big drive.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Dude, back in the day, people were like, I don't know about these cars, man. They don't have eyes.
Yeah. I don't trust it because it doesn't poop.
I remember, I think it was an episode of The Dollop. Like, before cars in New York City, horse waste was like a huge issue, obviously. But also, they would just, like, horses would just die in the street and they would just leave them there.
Yeah, at the beginning, cars were sort of seen as like a more environmentally friendly option because horses would just poop and then they die and then they rot.
Yeah. So New York
City.
That's
like a really, that's a depressing way of like describing a horse's life. That's like a really sad horse, like kind of like a nihilist. It's like you poop, you die, you rot.
I just watched a video of a horse getting tucked in for bed and he he grabbed the blanket with his teeth and pulled it over his shoulder.
See, that's why people were so reluctant to adopt
cars. Can the auto car tuck itself in at night when it sleeps? It doesn't have to sleep.
The auto car,
Cornelius.
The auto car doesn't even roll its eyes at me when I'm trying to climb a tree.
What? Is that a trope of a horse?
No, I could just see it happening. Like, that's a good horse. Like, I'm trying to, like, climb a tree.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it well. And my horse is like, idiot.
It's not the first thing that comes to mind when I think of horses, but it checks out.
I mean, it is a trope in children's films where the horse, the protagonist's horse usually has like some sort of sarcastic quirks.
Yeah.
He's a smart aleck horse. So I could definitely see James, your horse, being like that.
I'm the protagonist in the movie of my life.
Yeah.
That's true.
So like, I think I would have like sort of like sarcastic kind of horse. He's like, he's my friend, but he doesn't.
Yeah, he kind of keeps you humble.
Yeah, he doesn't let me get away with anything.
When I was in, I didn't think I was going to go to college, and then like applied to a technical school and got in. And like the first day, I was like, this is when I turn it around. I was like a D-minus student in high school, and I'm like, this is, I want to be here. I got to put effort into it. And the first day I drew this like horse face on my, cause I have ADD and I just started doodling right away. And this horse face made me laugh so hard, but I was like trying to stifle it. And then like the dude next to me saw it and he started laughing and I was like, fuck, I already messed up college. Like the teacher was like giving me shit.
Is there something you'd like to share with the class? And then you're dude, this shit's going to make you.
I just accidentally drew the funniest horse. I dropped out of college because my roommates and I got a smoke machine and we would just like fill my roommate's room until we couldn't see at all.
Oh my God.
And I got so sick that really? I like missed class for like a week. And then I was like, nah, I'll move to LA.
That's pretty amazing. I thought that story was going to end like, yeah, we put it in my roommate's room overnight when he was sleeping and he died.
Yeah.
So they kicked us out.
I was going there too.
They kicked us out.
They kicked us out of school for murdering my roommate.
California actually has no extradition to other states, amazingly. So that's why I'm here. rest in peace, Greg. Welcome to Past Gas. we got some horse banter going on, but I am your host, Nolan Sykes, joined as always by my other hosts, James Pumphrey.
Whoa! I didn't know what I was going to say.
That was new, yeah.
Keep going.
And Joe Weber.
What's up, Wink Wink Nation? It's been a minute. Let's get back into it.
That's really good.
Fired up.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute.
Get back into it.
As the intro suggests, we are talking about Bertha Benz and her drive in the Benz Patton motor wagon, which really set the automotive industry, at least in Germany, in motion. We have a lot to credit her for. So I think it's now's the time to thank Miss Benz.
It really turned the carriage business on its hooves.
Yeah, she really took on big carriage.
Yeah, she did. She did. So I'm excited to tell this story. We've mentioned it a few times, I think, in like Wheelhouse. I don't know if we've ever mentioned it on Up to Speed, because James has a strict no spoked wheels policy for Up to Speed.
Yeah, no wooden wheels allowed.
So I think we've mentioned Bertha and this drive, I think, twice on Wheelhouse. And
to understand the car, first you need to understand the domestication of the pony.
I saw a great tweet where it was like, every young nonfiction writer will start by doing the thesis or like an introduction up top, but then like rewinding way too far back into the past, yeah, as in the first paragraph. And I'm trying to stop that trend because I was like, oh, that's what I do. With every wheel.
I bet you're
sure.
Wondering how we got here.
So yeah. How are you guys? How are you guys doing? A little check in with the my fellow hosts.
I'm over it, man. Yeah,
I'm excited.
We're recording this on our second to last day before holiday break, and I'm ready. I'm going to a cabin. I'm ready to do it.
You gonna leave your phone at home? You're gonna disconnect like Topher Grace in that episode of Black Mirror?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. I admire
I'm
that.
Not leaving it at home. Because I have a heart condition, I'd like to be able to call 911. But
that makes sense.
I am gonna put it in a box.
Nice. A heart shaped box?
I'm feeling pretty good. Sorry to cut you off.
Joe, you basically live in a cabin. What's your plan?
It's more of a treehouse.
I was like, these like lockdown orders are perfect for me because I do like my house is cabin like, and I've been batting 1,000 with Christmas presents with my girlfriend right now.
Ooh, I still need to get some for my sister.
Yeah, so I'm feeling pretty good right now. Nice. Feeling pretty fired up.
What'd you get, Rachel, dude?
label maker. I got her a weighted blanket. Yeah.
Speaking of label makers, like I think the true sign of becoming like a serious sim racer is buying a label maker because I have to like label all the buttons on my wheel.
Rachel's a serious sim racer.
I'm a proud owner of a Dymo Letra Tag. It's got so many functions I don't even know how to use. Anyway,
it got cursive.
It doesn't have curves. Actually, it might. It might have curves. There's lots of font options. I didn't even realize that.
Does it have Call Mommy?
It does have Call Mommy. Yeah.
I got my sisters and my mom. I got them all mushroom kits.
Oh, my sister got my mom a mushroom kit. It must be a mom thing.
Yeah, moms love mushrooms.
Like what type of mushrooms are you talking here?
Pork baby bellas.
Okay.
Not that. I literally just Porky Pig stuttered.
Yibbity, yibbity.
baby bellas.
None of those psilocybin shrooms there?
No, I didn't get my mom magic mushrooms.
You can't really grow those in captivity, can you?
Yeah.
They don't ship well because you get arrested most of the time.
Oh. They keep just fine.
They're just
but
illegal.
You go to prison.
Legal in Oregon.
That's right. I'm afraid to do mushrooms.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to
you
trip,
gotta,
dude.
You don't want to open any of the doors in that brain.
Well,
no, I don't.
Keep I think for someone with anxiety and depression, it's great to take little tiny bits and microdose. It has the same effects as like antidepressants.
Interesting. Maybe I will give that a shot.
I try and do mushrooms about once a year.
You got to be into the idea of doing it, right?
Not microdosing. It's like drinking on par with like drinking a kombucha. Like you feel like kind of electrified a little bit, but you don't get any of like the hallucinogenic properties.
Okay, yeah, I don't want those. I've been watching a lot of cosmic and sci-fi horror lately. Ooh. Don't need that.
Lovecraft Country? Not great.
It kind of fell off a little bit.
Yeah, first like two episodes I thought were great. And
oh, I was like, oh, this is my new favorite show.
Yeah, it got too like goofy.
Yeah.
Like Doctor Who. Like I hate Doctor Who because it's just so silly.
Yeah.
Don't want to offend any of the Who heads out there. We love you.
We don't want to offend Cindy Lou Who. We don't want to offend the
We don't want to offend
Who's.
Christina. Even though she probably
really? She's a TARDIS?
She's retardist.
James, on your
she
suggestion.
She writes for retardist? Sorry.
Jeez. Based on your suggestion, James, Chloe and I watched The Undoing.
Oh, that's great.
Pretty good.
Oh, that's a Nicole Kidman vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Hugh Grant.
That's the Nicole Kidman Hugh Grant vehicle. Yes,
great performances all around.
Yeah, love that Hugh Grant. Love
I
that
love
Nicole
Hugh
Kidman.
Grant.
Lots of on that show.
I'm like halfway through Queen's Gambit, and I'm like, I want like 20 more episodes of this.
Yeah, I wish I understood chess.
Yeah, they do a great job of like fucking making it seem realistic though, because like. Uh-huh. I was look on the I don't know chess very well, but I was on the look for like, you know, when like the skateboarding show, I'm like, mm-hmm. I call bullshit on the writers, mm-hmm. but this one, they did their research.
There's a skateboarding show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an
like,
HBO skateboarding
show. Four chicks in New York City. And it's like a skate crew. It's really good. The second season's much better. But some of the language is like, yeah, I was thinking about frontside ollieing this thing and ollie kick flipping that thing, and it's like, no, you didn't talk to any skateboarders before you wrote this.
To be fair though, you know a lot more about skateboarding than you do chess.
Yeah, so my BS
your BS meter is not as impressive. Like you, if you got hired on Queen's Gambit, I think like a chess person would probably be like, this guy's like talked to two chess players.
Yeah. Oh, he calls everything the Sicilian defense.
Yeah. This guy's not even ranked.
It takes too long to rank. I don't have that time.
Yeah. Big chess keeping us down. We've been talking for about 20
minutes.
Yeah,
we really have. We got a lot of bants.
Good
bants.
Yeah, not even bits, just some bants.
Just like...
You know, we talk about the history of a car. We throw in some bits. We throw in some bants. Bing, bang, boom. You got to pass gas.
We talk about Nicole Kidman. It's all good.
We'll be right back with more of this story. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
without further ado, let's get into the story of Bertha Benz. Cecily Bertha Ringer was born on May 3rd, 1849 to Carl and Augusta Ringer. She was the third of nine children of the Ringer family. They were pretty wealthy. They lived in the southwestern German town of Pforzheim. Curious and ambitious, Bertha became interested in technical innovations at a very early age. As a child, she loved listening to her father, a carpenter who had gained wealth through clever real estate transactions, explain the inner workings of the locomotive. She had a very mechanical mind. Bertha began attending a school for high-born daughters at the age of nine, where she studied the natural sciences. But she was shocked to discover an entry in the family Bible from the day she was born, which read, quote, "Unfortunately, only a girl again."
Oh, my God. Aww.
Hey, I got this commemorative Bible to celebrate the birth of your daughter.
Cool. I'm going to write about my disappointment.
The entry marked her father's disappointment at failing to produce a son in an era and culture that saw women as a lesser gender. According to family legend, though, discovering this entry triggered Bertha's determination to show the world that women were capable of great things.
Hell yeah.
On June 27th, 1869, 20-year-old Bertha met a penniless engineer named Carl Benz during a train excursion to the Maulbronn Monastery organized by the social club called Eintracht.
Sounds fun.
Soon after wandering...
He doesn't have a penny, but he has the same name as my father.
Carl soon wandered into Bertha and her mother's train compartment, and Benz began explaining his idea for a motorized vehicle. Bertha was quickly smitten by his obvious intelligence and big dreams. That's kind of like a cool... He must have definitely... Like, I would not... If I had a really cool idea... Let me start over. If I had a really cool idea, I would not just willy-nilly pitch it to people out of nowhere. I think Carl was quite smitten with Bertha.
What if you're like trying to pick up a girl though?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not going to tell you guys about my next great show idea, even though I work with you.
Well, you should.
Yeah, dude.
Just as an example. As an example, I'm not going to tell you my idea for a microwave that doesn't beep again to remind you that it's done because I already heard it beep, okay?
That's not a new invention, Nolan. That's just a microwave that doesn't make sound.
Right, so really I'm not going to tell you my idea for a microwave that doesn't make sound. But if the actress who played Elena in The Undoing is in my train compartment, I'm probably going to try to woo her with my idea for a microwave that doesn't make sound.
And I would kick you out of my compartment if you're in there talking about some technical innovations.
Anyway.
Like, I'm trying to sleep. This is a train. I don't need to
think. Yeah, it's like 3 a.m. Anyway, Bertha and Carl soon began making plans for a life together. I guess they just really got along. Neither one wanted to settle in Pforzheim, so in 1870, Carl Benz moved to Mannheim, and there he joined forces with a mechanical engineering specialist named August Ritter to found the Carl Benz and August Ritter Mechanische Werkstatt, otherwise known as the Mechanical Engineering Workshop.
Does that umlaut have an
Stadt.
R sound?
Werkstatt.
Yeah, Werkstatt.
August Ritter Mechanisch Werkstatt. But Ritter proved to be an unreliable business partner, unfortunately, and the two men were soon at odds with one another. When Bertha realized the problems that her fiancé was facing while he visited her in Pforzheim, she persuaded her father to pay her dowry early and give her an advance on her inheritance to help Carl detangle himself from Ritter.
That's a weird conversation.
Yeah.
It's like you already are embarrassed for your partner in your parents' eyes, you know? You want to have like a viable partner that can make his own money. And then to have the conversation and be like, look, I know he sounds crazy. He starts talking about this vehicle that doesn't exist. But if you could just like
a horseless horse.
Yeah. And if I'm Carl Ringer, I'm like, I don't want to give this guy a dowry.
Listen,
you know?
Yeah. I'm rich. Marry a rich guy like me.
He invented the t-shirts with like the different color around the collar.
Ringer, the ringer tee. Yeah. In fact, everybody in this story is wearing a ringer tee.
Yeah. So her father, Bertha's father, did not like Carl, mostly because of his bank account, as you guys already alleged. Having worked his own way up from the lower classes, Bertha's father believed his daughter didn't appreciate the rarity of financial security. But he eventually agreed to give her 4,244 gulden, which could have bought Bertha a mansion with some money left over. It was also barely just enough to pay off the company's debts and buy out Ritter. Man. Wow. So they were in trouble, like, pretty early on. According to German law at the time, Bertha was able to act as an investor in Carl's company only because she was unmarried. What? So if she was married, she couldn't be an investor?
Yeah.
That's wild. She ironically lost that legal right on July 20th, 1872, when she and Carl finally tied the knot. Carl later wrote of his bride, quote, you want to read? Give me a German accent, James.
In marrying, I was joined by an idealist who knew what she wanted in all things, from the insignificant to the weighty.
Carl moved on to a new manufacturing venture, Benz and C, using the remainder of Bertha's dowry to get the company up and running. The next 15 years of their lives were dominated by financial problems, as Carl needed more money for equipment than the business could provide. In 1877, a bailiff came to their family home, now packed with three young children, and seized his machines and tools, which were later sold at an auction to cover claims made by a different disagreeable business partner. This guy sucks at business.
This guy is not a good businessman, no.
Despite these worries, Bertha continued to stand by her man, which included helping out in his workshop. Here, the couple held many discussions which helped Bertha acquire a wealth of technical knowledge. Witnesses of the time later reported that she knew the engines and the cars nearly as well as her husband. Nearly as well. Together, Carl and Bertha developed the world's first two-stroke gasoline engine, which they got running for the first time on New Year's Eve, 1879.
Can you imagine how crazy that New Year's Eve party would be? Everyone's just huddled around a two-stroke engine.
Yeah.
Someone's mixing gas and oil.
Dude,
it's a music box.
Bertha's a real ride or die chick, man.
Yeah, she's got like Madame Curie vibes.
She's like, look, your businesses might be failing, but I'm still going to help you with this because this is your dream. And I probably know as more about this than you do.
She's like Eve. She's like the Rough Riders, just working on motorcycle engines. Carl finished work on his motor wagon in December 1885. Bertha served as his field tester and contributed to Carl's design with the addition of wound wire induction coils to the ignition. Because of her technical and financial contributions to the company, under modern day law, Bertha would have held patent rights to the motor wagon. But as a married woman, she was not legally allowed to be named as an inventor at the time.
Times have changed, but I don't understand the logic of this, where the only justification this would be is like, women are just supposed to be in the house and do nothing else.
Yeah. She couldn't have possibly helped invent it because her husband was around.
Women,
he's probably smarter.
Insane, dude.
Women in America weren't allowed to have bank accounts without their husband's permission till like the 60s or 70s.
Yeah. Women in Saudi Arabia couldn't drive until like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Jeez.
Women have had it pretty tough, Nolan. Maybe you'll crack a book every once in a while. Maybe open up Twitter on your little phone every now and then. Yeah,
maybe log in and open up Twitter on your phone. That comes in app now.
Well, they make it in an app now.
You don't have to
now.
Look at it on your browser anymore. You don't have to open up Internet Explorer to look at Twitter anymore. You can put it on your phone.
Hey, you know that little button with the bird on it on your phone? Maybe you open it up and learn about the injustice of the world.
In January 1886, Benz presented the patent Motorwagen Automobile to the world. It was the world's first vehicle with gas engine operation, as he called it, on the patent application, which is now considered the unofficial birth certificate of the automobile. However, Carl's business acumen continued to lag behind his technical skill. The first few public displays of his new invention did not go well, including one demonstration that ended when a driver lost control of his vehicle and crashed into a wall, terrifying what? Onlookers. A horse would.
It only
do
goes
that.
Like 10 miles per hour. How did someone crash it?
Dude.
A horse would never run into a wall. Carl was also a perfectionist who insisted on waiting until the machine was absolutely perfect before marketing it. To make matters even more stressful, Benz now faced competition a few miles away, where another German engineer named Gottlieb Daimler had invented the first four-wheeled high-speed automobile. Strong-willed, energetic Bertha decided something needed to be done. Someone had to prove that her husband's invention had the capability to drive the way the world traveled. Up to this point, motorized drives were only done in very short trials that returned to the point of origin and always under the assistance of mechanics. But faced with a business in desperate straits and a husband who seemed not to believe completely in his work, Bertha threw caution to the wind. In early August 1888, 39-year-old Bertha decided to drive her husband's newest design, the patent Motorwagen Model 3, 66 miles from Mannheim to Pforzheim, without telling him.
I mean,
sneaky,
that's
sneaky.
Have you ever like someone's like working on a project and you just want to like mess with it and like use it, and they just are such perfectionists. Maybe it never happens to you guys. It happens to me all the time.
No, it's whenever me and Zach shoot a wheelhouse, we reformat the entire script the night before. So I know what you're talking about. Bertha rose before dawn, waking her sons Richard and Eugen. She rose before dawn, waking her sons Richard and Eugen, who were 13 and 15 years old, respectively, and left a note on the kitchen table informing Carl that they were going to be visiting her mother, but not mentioning how she planned to get there.
So Carl was probably like, oh, they're taking the horse, probably. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Then the trio pushed the Motorwagen out of Carl's workshop and down the road so Carl wouldn't wake up when Bertha brought its single-cylinder, four-stroke engine to life. Nice. Bertha later described it as, quote, a real conspiracy.
Did you ever do this with your parents' car when you were, like, 14? You, like, put it in neutral and push it down the driveway?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I ever did that with the Taurus. I think I did. Yeah, what I would do is I would turn the car off because it was manual. So like I'd get some momentum going down my street and then turn the car off and then just coast with no brakes or power steering down to my house. But it was only because I got home late after playing like Halo Reach with my friends. I was never doing anything like illicit in my teen years, probably unsurprisingly. Yeah. So it doesn't have as much punch, that story. Anyway, the Motorwagen Model 3 they had pilfered had a 954 cc rear-mounted engine capable of 2.5 horsepower at 500 RPM. That's actually pretty interesting. And that's like weird specs because like a lawnmower, you know, little engine, four-cylinder thing, makes like that same power but at much higher RPM. This thing must have had like a huge cylinder.
Wait, lawnmowers are four-cylinder?
No, four-stroke, sorry.
Oh.
Anyway, the two-speed fixed disc gearbox was controlled by a hand lever beneath the steering crank, which pushed the leather strap transmission between discs. I have no idea how this works. It sounds...
There was a horse operating the transmission.
There were lots of little mice in clothing.
The steel pipe sorry.
It's basically a factory in there. So they're like pulling levers and there's steam going on. And
it's like one of those like those big piano machines with all the different bells and like whistles on it that like cartoons used to have.
And they only work if that song that goes dun, 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 dun,
yeah, yeah. And one of the mice is like fat and he's trying real hard, but
but
other mouse is like not frustrated with him, but like definitely needs to tell him what to do. And
he doesn't want to babysit.
Yeah, let's just say that he gets stuck in one of the cogs.
Oh no. not Fredo.
Goes around a couple times.
No.
It's pretty comical stuff.
Too many hijinks in the speed factory here.
Yeah.
But when he comes out, he's really skinny because he squished out all the fat out of his butt.
But he'll go like,
yeah.
Like he's like an accordion walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
That's like how they used to write movies. Like a bunch of guys would get in a room and be like,
yeah, and then he gets like stuck in, the factory.
Because he's too busy looking at a gal on the side of the road.
Yeah, he's obsessed with cheese.
All right, I think that's enough screenwriting for the day. Who wants a cigar and a 40-ounce steak?
Yeah, let's eat a 40-ounce steak and do some cocaine from the pharmacy.
The tube steel chassis sat on 3 wooden spoke wheels. Yeah, it powered the 2 rear wheels that were ringed with steel and a controllable 80-centimeter front wheel covered with solid rubber for steering. The fully loaded vehicle weighed about 800 pounds and topped out at 10 miles per hour downhill.
I think he could go faster than 10 on a steep hill without a motor.
Yeah. I got this baby up to 12 miles per hour when I played it in Gran Turismo. So wow. Not saying I'm the fastest motor wagon driver out there, but
definitely up there.
Up there.
Yeah. Do you think you could run faster than this thing?
Yes, definitely.
After a 1986 test drive of a replica patent motor wagon created by Mercedes, Car and Driver described starting the car as, quote, a trip in itself. White gas and water are added to the appropriate brass reservoirs behind the seat. Engine oilers are topped off with 30 weight. The carburetor is adjusted with a knurled knob located just under the seat. The ignition is switched on, and the trembler coil sounds for all the world like a modern-day key buzzer. Exposed crankshaft journals are lubricated with a squirt or two of oil, and the cylinder is primed with a fuel-air mix by giving the massive horizontal flywheel a few swings back and forth. Finally, the big wheel is spun rapidly until the Benz engine fump, 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 sneeze fumps to life. Pretty cool. Bertha was able to complete this process and get the car started without waking Carl, but she soon faced her first problem. She didn't know where they were going.
Oh, no.
Oh,
it's man. Not. I mean, you gotta understand, you know, this is a long time ago. You can't just pull out your little phone and say, hey, Siri, where am I going? You know, like back in the day, you had to use your brain.
Is this a Pete Davidson impression?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Devin Palmer.
Oh, yeah. He's really good. His like meekness is really funny.
Yeah, so all this was before roads, much less road signs. Most people at the time preferred to travel long distances by train.
I think he meant to say paved roads.
All right. This
There's
was
definitely roads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
All roads.
I mean, the Romans had roads, right? That's why all roads lead to Rome.
Yeah, we should do a wheelhouse on that. Yeah. It'll probably be really good.
This was before paved roads, much less road signs. Most people at the time preferred to travel long distances by train. And the few local horse coach drivers who traveled routes out of Mannheim simply knew their way out of there. So Bertha decided to take a circuitous route following the wagon tracks and railways through areas familiar to her. Yeah, makes sense. This initially took the family northeast through Weinheim rather than directly south towards Pforzheim. From Weinheim, she turned south towards Weischlock, where Bertha found a solution to her second major issue on the trip, gasoline.
Yeah, I was wondering.
And
about
you gotta remember, this is 1886. There's not just a shell with power V.
It's not like, oh crap, well, we're out of gas. Look for a Sinclair station with the dinosaur on it, James's favorite logo.
They didn't even know who James was, much less that that's my favorite logo.
You gotta understand, this is 100 years before James even existed, so they couldn't even ask him. You know?
I'm willing to bet at this time also, they didn't even know what dinosaurs were.
Whoa.
No, that's not true.
When did they discover dinosaurs?
Dinosaur bones discovered.
1677.
Oh, I'm way off. Never mind.
Robert Plott is credited with discovering the first dinosaur bone, but his best guess as to what it belonged to was a giant human. William Buckland, the first professor of geology at
Oxford University.
The dinosaur fossil was correctly identified for what it was.
Wouldn't it be such a flex if that dude's name was like Robert Dinosaur and then he named everything after him?
Robert Dinosaur is my odd future name.
Yeah. You're like a golf instructor or something.
Robert Dinosaur.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors. Carl Benz had initially estimated that the wagon Model 3 could travel about 25 miles per gallon.
This guy is a dumbass.
Based on his short drives along paved roads. But he was way off. Because of the rough terrain that Bertha faced, her car needed so much fuel that it had to be refilled after a few kilometers.
Wow.
So not worth it.
Not worth it. Switching units, that's good. Always good in a script. Give people good idea. So, I mean, that'd be like less than a few miles, not 25. But seeing as cars had barely been invented at this point, it was also a time way before gas stations. In fact, it was also before fuel tanks. The Model 3 could hold gas in its carburetor a bit over 1 gallon at the time. So if her trip was to be a success, Bertha needed to find a regular fuel
source.
That's
a huge carburetor.
Yeah. She found it in the pharmacies along her path where they sold Ligroin, a petroleum-based cleaning fluid. When Bertha tried to buy the entire stock of Ligroin at her first stop in Weishlock, the city's pharmacist tried to assure her that one bottle would be enough to clean her dirt and oil-stained dress. Got her. She persisted and left with every bottle they had, enough to get her to the next town. That pharmacy still exists today, in fact, and advertises itself as the world's first fuel station. You're in Weishlock and you need some ibuprofen, you might just be going to the world's first Sunoco.
From Weishlock, the journey continued through...
It's not Sunoco. I don't know what it's called.
From Weishlock... The journey continued through Bruchel, where Bertha acquired more Ligroin. Then she turned east again, driving out of the Rhine Valley and along several ancient Roman roads into the hills of the Upper Rhine Plain. Here, and the hills were alive. I mean, they were alive with the sound of music. Here in the hills, the engine's two gears and 2.5 horsepower output weren't enough to get it up the hilly incline. So Bertha, Eugen, and Richard had to get out and push the car up steep roads. This car sucks.
It weighs 800 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot to push up a hill.
Not for Eugen.
Yeah, Eugen was yoked.
Yeah, he was like a fullback.
It might be Egon.
They were doing...
Egon? Yeah.
I don't think
Not like Eugene?
I think it's like Eugene. It's spelled E-U-G-E-N for the listener out there. I think it's Eugen.
There's going to be some German dude in the comments being like, you absolutely butchered Eugen's name.
It's actually Ralph. Anyway, Eugen.
Unlistenable. 0 stars.
Hey, at least he gave us a rating.
Near the village of Wilferdingen, Bertha and her boys reached a hill too steep for them to peek on their own. Unfortunately, help from the locals was generally hard to come by because many villagers they passed would kneel on the road to pray, fearing that this smoking monster meant that the end of the world was coming. What? a bunch of idiots. But here, two young farmhands who were initially wary of the machine finally stepped in to help. And Bertha's journey eventually continued along the foot of the Odenwald Mountains. This being
no wonder his business was failing if people thought that this was like the devil.
Yeah, that actually makes sense with that kind of context in mind. Maybe he wasn't just a bad businessman, but
these people are wearing strange beliefs. Yeah, like all these guys are wearing like not very well shaped straw hats and like carrying
Lederhosen.
Like wooden rakes.
Yeah. Wooden shoes, probably.
Yeah.
Wooden pants.
I just caught two new fish for my feet.
This being the first drive ever that was actually long enough to listen to a podcast, it's unsurprising that Bertha eventually ran into mechanical problems. Two specific instances stood out when Bertha recounted her journey later in life.
The first time the fuel line was clogged, my hairpin turned out to be helpful there. The second time the ignition was broken, I used my garter to fix it in front of my sons.
Yes, Bertha cleared a fuel clog with a long straight pin that held her hat onto her hair, then repaired a faulty ignition wire by using a garter belt stripped from her own leg as insulation.
I'm telling you, dude, that's pretty, ingenuity. A lot of ingenuity there. Mm-hmm. Pretty creative. Like this. I like Bertha. I like Bertha a lot.
In one of the first episodes of Wangan Midnight, this guy fixes his Ferrari with a pair of lady stockings.
What is he? How does he do that?
Like the timing belt or something. It's like an accessory belt. In addition to her clever solutions to the first two instances of car trouble in world history, Bertha had to make a stop at a blacksmith in Bruchel to mend a chain in the engine. And besides gas, another constant need was water. The engine's temperature was regulated by an evaporative cooling system and had to be constantly refilled from anywhere they could find water, public bathhouses, streams, and, when there's no other choice, even ditches. This trip has to take so long.
Yeah, this is not worth it.
No.
I would just like send a letter to my mom.
Meanwhile, Carl Benz is like, "Where is my family and my life's work?"
He has like one of those pointy sleep hats and a big sleep dress. Just waking up for the day.
Yeah, they paid a few like mice to like paid him in cheese to stay back. And every time he woke up, they'd hit him on the head with a hammer.
And his eyelids flip up like shades real fast. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then the mice have to like pull them down real quick.
Yeah.
Every time they hit him with the hammer, the bump on his head gets bigger and bigger. Uh-huh. Until his hat is like straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. By the end of the movie, his hat is just like sitting on.
We should get this animated.
Yeah, man, awesome. I'm so glad that another scene done, gentlemen. Let's go
I'm
get
so
another
glad
scene.
That, I'm so glad that we work for the golden era of Disney animation.
Speaking of whiskey and animators writing stuff, one of my favorite places in LA to go is the Tam O'Shanter, and they have a table where Disney and his Imagineers used to go plan out Disney World. Or Disneyland at the time. And they would like put the tables together and drink whiskey because it's a whiskey bar and like lay out the blueprints and just get like hammered.
What's this called? And
it's called the Tam O'Shanter. It's on Los Feliz. And they carved into the table. They got drunk and carved into the table. And so there's like these etchings in the table that are still there of like amazing dinosaurs of just like drunk animators were like carving into it.
Dude, really cool. I want to go here.
It's really good. It's like a prime rib place. It's been around for 100 years.
I love me some good prime rib. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, they got cream corn too?
Oh, it's so good. Everything is good there.
How do you spell Tam O'Shanter?
It's Tam. T-A-M. O'Shanter.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's in, what's it called?
Atwater.
Dude, I gotta go here.
It's owned by Lowry's.
So Lowry's bought their prime rib recipe and their seasoning, and that's where they got their like Lowry's seasoning from. Damn, this is like 100 years ago.
That gravy looks dope.
It's so good. They're like Yorkshire pudding. I didn't even know what that was until I ate there, and I'm like, now I crave it.
Damn, $47 for a prime rib.
Yeah, it's good though.
It caught prime for nothing.
I guess not.
Ooh, yum spinach.
All right, that'll be a birthday thing, I guess.
I'm so hungry right now.
I know, I haven't eaten breakfast. Thank you. Thank you for that.
The Motorwagen finally rolled up to Fort Zim at dusk, only for Bertha to discover that her mother had left on vacation.
Ah, what?
This didn't damp a Bertha's spirits, though. She quickly telegraphed her husband with news of the successful trip.
Wow. I did not know that detail, that her mom wasn't even there. That's really funny.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm on vacation. I mean, yeah. Farfsvinsbein.
I took a cruise, didn't you know?
I've met somebody.
His name's Greg.
His name is Greg. He has a ponytail.
Carl later recalled waking up to find the note Bertha left him. Then, upon discovering that a car was missing from his workshop, putting two and two together.
Wow. You're a great job, Carl.
When he received news that Bertha...
I think Carl might be Batman. The world's greatest detective.
That's so funny. When he received news that Bertha had made it to Forzheim, Carl was thrilled. He telegraphed back, asking Bertha to send him her car's drive chains as quickly as possible. He needed them to get another Model 3 ready for exhibition in Munich. He now knew that he had a finished product. And so did the rest of the world. News of Bertha's drive had already reached newspapers from eyewitness accounts of residents of the towns that Bertha had passed through along her way. Not only had she proved the effectiveness of the Benz motor wagon to Carl, she managed to garner huge amounts of free publicity for the company.
That's You're awesome. Welcome, Carl.
Yeah, Carl. Bertha and her boys spent several days in Forzheim, during which 15-year-old Eugen gave free rides to the town's many interested citizens. In an interview Bertha gave later, she admitted that both sons had also driven parts of the route, probably because this early form of driving was too physically demanding for one person to manage on their own.
I mean, is it like shifting the hard part?
Well, I think also steering was probably not very easy. Yeah. And like, there's like no suspension either, like good suspension. Like, you're getting rocked the whole time trying to keep control of this thing.
Yeah, you got that big red baboon ass after this ride.
That's right. Despite the thrill of her initial success, however, Bertha's drive was still only halfway done. 3 days after their arrival, the travelers began their return trip. And this time, the route was shorter and headed in an almost straight line towards Mannheim.
Oh, we should have just gone the straight way the first time. Why did we go over the mountains?
However, Joe, the shorter path meant extra hills.
Oh, okay.
Bertha faced both tougher uphill pushes and steeper grades on the downhill drives, which put... more pressure on the brakes, which was operated by a hand lever on the side of the vehicle and can only slow down the 800-pound vehicle with huge physical effort by the driver. The brake shoe wore out very quickly on the hills, so Bertha again stopped in Bauschlott. This time, she sought out a cobbler to cover the worn-out brake shoe with leather and, in the process, inventing brake lining.
Hell yeah.
With this final ingenious contribution to automotive history, Bertha completed the rest of her return trip relatively smoothly. Over the 120-mile drive, Bertha Benz not only proved the Model 3 to her husband that she has planned, but also established the future of the automobile to many skeptics. The avalanche of publicity that came in the drive's wake led to an outpouring of orders for Benz and C. Within a decade, Bertha and Carl's company became the world's largest car manufacturer, with annual sales of 600 vehicles and a full-time staff of more than 400 people. Carl Benz later admitted that Bertha was, quote, much more courageous than me and went on a decisive trip for further development of the motor carriage.
Yeah, all she did was test the car.
Yeah.
She just used your invention.
Yeah, but like, she was more courageous. I'm giving her credit.
Yeah, you're a big wimp.
That's unnecessary, man. The trip also led to specific changes in her husband's design. Because Eugen and Richard complained loudly about all the uphill pushing they had to do on their journey. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Carl added a lower gear to the motor wagon.
Hey, Dad, you know what we really hate about the motor wagon? You got to push it uphill.
Yeah, but look at you. You're so strong now. Can play fullback.
You're just changing the subject. Look, just add a lower gear.
It would be look, really
Daddy,
sick if you
Daddy
could drive
got you up. a new dog. And thanks to his wife's repair at the cobbler's, he upgraded the braking system to include brake lining. As a final part of the Trip's legacy, it made clear to automakers and sellers for the first time that it was essential to test new models under real road conditions. Who would have thought? Wow. Amid the newfound success of Benz & C, Bertha took a step back from its business operations long before the company merged with Carl's old rival, Gottlieb Daimler, and began manufacturing the Mercedes-Benz. But her belief in the broke engineer who wandered into her train compartment had already been validated. In 1925, Carl wrote the following in his memoirs. James, please.
Only one person remains with me in the small ship of life when it seemed destined to sink. That was my wife. Bravely and resolutely, she set the new sails of hope.
Wow.
That's beautiful. Sweet.
That's a very, yeah, that's very nice. Bertha passed away in 1944 at the age of 95, 15 years after Carl had passed. Her lifetime spanned not only the advent of automobiles and airplanes, but just as important to the girl who was shocked by her father's entry in the family Bible, the women's suffrage movement, greater educational opportunities for young girls, and expanded legal rights for all women. In 2008, the Bertha Benz Memorial Route was officially established by German authorities as a route of the industrial heritage of humankind. It's now possible for any curious driver to follow 120 miles of road signs that Bertha didn't have and trace her route from Mannheim to Pforzheim and back again. Bertha's drive is also celebrated with a biennial antique automobile rally in Germany, and in 2016, Bertha Benz was inducted into the Automotive Hall of Fame 32 years after her husband. But you know what? Better late than never.
Amen.
And that's Amen. The end of the story.
Or is it to be continued?
I think I would really like to try some stupid long drive in a really antique car like that. I think that'd make for some good content.
It'd be fun for like 2 miles, and then you'd be like, yeah. Where do I find Litigall or whatever that's called?
I think I'd like to maybe do like the Peking to Paris era.
Yes.
Of cars more. Like actual cars.
Fair enough.
Like I think first car would be a little rough.
Yeah.
I don't want to push it under
Years ago, Matt Farah did this thing called All Cars Go to Heaven, where they like went on this off-road trail with a bunch of different cars, and he brought a Model T, and it did not go super smoothly. I would like to do something like that as well.
I bet it made some great content, though.
It did. I think he sold that. I think he made money on All Cars Go to Heaven. Anyway, very inspirational story, man. Just goes to show that
R&D.
Sometimes you just gotta send it. Bertha was like one of the first people to like send it.
Oh,
you know?
Dude, she's the first person to never live.
she was like, "Let's go,
like, let's go, Egan, let's go."
That is like a mom thing to say, though. Let's go, let's go. Come on, get out of bed.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, mom's got to get people to go all the time. Yeah, and you know what? They deserve all the respect and credit in the world. Moms are great. Here's to all the moms out there getting people to go.
All right, thank you very much for listening to Pass Gas. As always, tell a friend about the show. I think that's the best way to help us grow. If you know someone who likes cars, I think they'll like this show.
Even if they kind of like cars, but they really love bants and
if they love witty bants, about horses, let them know about
if
the
they
show.
Want if you have a friend who doesn't mind car history stuff but loves hearing guys talk about bullshit for 30 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, subscribe to YouTube.
Subscribe to YouTube, get on Twitter, check out the issues, go to the Instagram, follow me and James Pumphrey, Nolan at Nolan J Sykes, Joe at Joe G Weber, Donut at Donut Media,
and Bridget at Bridget in a Box.
Yeah, Bridget at Bridget in a Box if you like that fire Volkswagen / Dachshund content.
That's right. Yeah. Big thanks to our writer this week, Greg Nix, and of course our producer, as always, Bridget. Thanks for listening. Be kind.